Normalprat, en podcast fra Normal Norge. Normalprat en ny serie samtaler mellom styreleder André Nilsen og personer som engasjerer seg I norsk ruspolitikk.
Welcome everybody to a new episode of Normalprat. With me today, I have two friends from Nomad Institute, Daniela and Martin. And the topic for today is the legalization of cannabis in Germany. But before we get into that discussion and you enlighten us on what's going on in Germany, please do tell the audience, who is Nomad Institute?
Thanks, André. So we are a think tank. We make social research in drug policy, human rights, sustainable development, and new technologies. And we have two programs, one about human rights and drug policy, and another one about technological sovereignty and human dignity. Now we have an academic journal in these fields, make a fact basis for make advocacy, facilitate to the NGOs who works to the humanitarian and drug policy reform to have more accessible information in English, Spanish, and German.
Very interesting. So if we can get into the topic for today, what's going on in Germany at the moment?
Yeah, in Germany, it's a little bit confusing because a lot of people think it's big steps going on, but not exactly what we see when we are here. But we have to consider that these processes are not so fast as we wish. So we have to wait what will be the results. But we can say in the last year, in Germany, the coalition, the government coalition, had agreed coalition contract where they said in this legislation, we want to introduce a controlled dispensing of cannabis for adults for recreational use. And for this, they began a process to make the law, the regulation law. And they did several consultations and exchange with professionals and experts. And in this consultation process participate, of course, a lot of organizations from Germany and experts. And then the drug commissioner of Germany did this key point paper. So in Germany, Eckpunktepapier, the key point paper for this adult cannabis dispensing regulation. And this paper has the key points for the legal framework internationally, how they want to work, national, what they want to do, for example, to ban the cannabis of the drug law in Germany or for the home growing and health and consumer protection, of course, what's about the quality. They think in this key point paper about a limit for THC, about 15%, for example, and prohibition of advertising, for example. Of course, children and consumer protection and youth protection is the more important. So they are focusing too on the prevention, of course. And with the taxes, they want to do principally prevention.
Okay. Yeah. So I was going to ask you, but you already mentioned that they have included NGOs and civil society in the process. That's good to hear. We hope for the same in Norway when we get to that stage. We might be little further behind here than we wish, but you never know, maybe in a couple of years. For us, looking at Germany, we feel like this is, even though it's going slow, slower than we want. I did not know that. But we also feel like this statement from Germany is a big one, because it could have some effect on other countries. And it will most definitely have an impact on maybe in the future how UN sees and regulates cannabis. I don't know, in the EU, or are there some international barriers Germany are trying to figure out when it comes to the EU and United Nations?
In general, we see like a real political intentions to make these steps to the reform in the next years, but it's far to be perfect, obviously. And for us, the big concerns is in some points, like for example, they don't want to allow e-markets of cannabis, for example. And I
What's that, e-markets? What's that?
Legal online shopping. And I think that this is grown because it's important to make accessible to facilitate the access to people who actually buy cannabis now, because now you can see in the main social media groups where you can buy illegal cannabis. So if the point is to end the black market, don't take into account the online market. The other thing is the cybersecurity. And I mean for the potential business, you know, the registry of companies, because you see a few months ago in Canada, the governmental office who have all this information was hacked. They stole all the information from the medium and short dispensaries. And actually, the coalition of dispensaries, the small dispensaries, denounced maybe this is a industry espionage action. Mm. When we have a new regulated market, we need to see the new challenge. Mm. Because it's important also take into account all the things about data protections in Europe, no? So I see these kind of things is not in the debate here in Germany. Actually, are a big issue. It's a security issues in the new regulated market. About your question about the things in the with the European Union and the UN, I guess it's only about political and use of soft power of the country. So I think Canada do it, and actually small countries like Uruguay. So I think it's only think of make a consensus, a political consensus here in Germany.
Okay, but do you think that it could have an effect on other countries stepping up to regulate cannabis in the future? Because we hear some countries are just waiting for Germany to make this first step.
Yes, of course, this is they can create a domino effect.
Yeah, because my personal dream and theory is that when Germany goes ahead, Denmark will follow, and then we have legalization on the doorstep here in Norway, and you can take the ferry to a legal cannabis market from Norway either way. So it won't make much difference that it's illegal in Norway, but we hope Norway will follow. So can you maybe talk a little bit about, like, just to answer to add to your concern about cybersecurity, isn't this something maybe that every industry are still not up to date with? Wouldn't you say it's like a general broader problem that industries don't take cybersecurity as seriously as they should, or is there something unique about
in general? But you need to think that this specific industry is changed from the black market to regulated market, so they have more treat, you know.
Yeah, and I also read some studies that I think maybe one in four persons who use illegal drugs in Finland actually acquire their illicit drugs from the internet on online buying, and I've seen some tendencies. I don't know what it's like in Norway, because there I don't think there's any studies on it, but I know that the transactions on the illicit market are more and more turning to device oriented, you know, purchasing, buying.
And it's not only, we need to think more in more easy things, because it's not like from 5-6 years ago when you need to go to some darknet or something in Tor or something like that. You can find illegal substances in Instagram, in Facebook, in WhatsApp. So it's a real issue, and not only for cannabis. The real issue is about synthetic opioids and controlled medicines and all these kind of illegal substances. Mm-hmm. That is the real issue.
Yeah. So what's the mood like in the German public? Are Germans behind this big move, or is it like some regional differences? Maybe in Berlin, people are pro, I don't know, and in other provinces, maybe more conservative. Or what's the mood like? The public opinion.
I don't know, days or weeks ago, some media make a survey about the topic, and actually now more than 56% of the population is agree to the regulation. The public opinion is some polarized, but I think it's not really important if the politician have the compromise to make the regulation. And you can see the example of Uruguay, because when they regulate the cannabis, less than 45% of the people was agree. And 5 years after the regulation, the more than the 50% was agree with the regulation. And because the point of the government in theory is to take decisions to the general public for the well-being, you know, and the goal of the regulation in Uruguay was against the crack market. So that's the goal of the regulation in Uruguay, and the solution works. So I think it's more about the political compromise and the real intention to make this. But now we think in Uruguay, but when they regulate the legal market worldwide of cannabis was really short. So now when the big companies like BlackRock have a lot of interest, economic interest in the cannabis market, and a lot of pharmaceuticals, I think is only time to this change. And for the civil society like us, it's important to see what is the next steps, because now we are to end the criminalization, respect the human dignity of people who use drugs. Mm-hmm. But the next challenges would be the workers' rights, prevent the industry to be a neocolonialist tool. Because we can see this with some companies from Canada, for example, who only contract people, Canadians in South Africa, for example, or things like that. So we have a lot of work after the regulation.
No, you make a strong and good point there, and maybe as you're talking, maybe we can I haven't prepared you for this, so if you don't feel prepared, just let me know. But I feel like maybe we should step out of Europe for a minute. And talk about, because obviously you come from El Salvador, right?
Yes,
Martinez.
And yeah, We have, there have been talks about some things happening in South and Latin America. For example, Mexico. There has been media writings about Mexico legalizing cannabis many times. and I listened to, I think it was Ethan Nadelman's podcast, Psychoactive, where there was some guy, I can't remember his name, but he debunked the whole Mexico legalizing cannabis theory. What's going on in Mexico? Do you know what's the status?
Yeah, now in Mexico, the real change is if you want to smoke or to grow your own plants, you need to go to the Supreme Court and make like a legal protection, something okay. like that. The court accept this request. That is the thing. So if you want to smoke and plant your plants, you only need to request this permission in the court, and that's it.
Okay, but is it?
If you don't have this paper, it's legal.
okay. But is it hard to get this paper? Is it bureaucratic? It's a long bureaucratic process, or?
I understand it's easy and it's not too much expensive.
Okay. Yeah. So it's a form of non-commercial legalization?
Exactly. Yes, because the court only said the prohibition of criminalization is inconstitutional. Ask the court for permission and they bring the permission and that's it. It's,
okay. Yeah. Because I don't remember, but I feel like I remember something about what you talked about, the big cannabis companies from Canada, for example, pushing hard for legalization in Mexico so they can have some sort of monopoly on the market. Or
yes, they are but actually Mexico have they own industry, but now okay. legal with THC it's only CBD and hemp.
Yeah, okay. So is there any other countries in Latin or South America who's making big changes?
Costa Rica, the last year Costa Rica decriminalized the cannabis use, and they have also medical cannabis. Yeah, maybe only Costa Rica in this last year. Yeah.
Argentina. Yeah, not so big steps. In Argentina, they are working. In Chile, they are working on the reform, but it's slow. And in Germany now, we are waiting for the project of the law for January or February. That's the next point where we are looking what they want to do.
And yeah. actually, if they respect the contract of the coalition, they need to approve the law next year. The election are in 2024. So
yeah. So if they approve the law next year, will it be legal next year?
No, maybe 2024.
Okay, yeah, maybe. Okay.
Because you know the guidelines of procedures and all these things before the application of the new law.
Okay, so what happened was there a turning point in the public debate in Germany that was like, okay, this is the moment where things are changing? Or was it a process of many different factors over time?
Yeah, I think there are some factors, but the most important, I think, in Germany is that, so it's that what I see in my work, is that yearly you have thousands of people who are criminalized and who have criminal processes because of cannabis, because less than 1 gram. So it's really crazy. It's really yeah. crazy. And so a lot of law enforcement perspective is important for this key point. And we saw that another point coming from the cannabis community is the thing with the permission to drive. A lot of cannabis consumers, but a lot of not only recreational users, because like medical users are criminalized and lose their license. Exactly. And that's a big problem for them, because in Germany we have on the countryside we have not so good connections.
Public transport, yeah.
And that's really a big issue for a lot of people here in Germany. So it's a point what is not important in Latin America, for example, but here in Germany is very important. Yeah, and the criminalization of people who have recreational use, it's not, a lot of people don't understand, because this is prohibited and alcohol, for example, not. And so they say, so we have a right to consume substances, and people who don't make problems and don't have problems with their consume, so it's okay if they can access to cannabis.
Yeah, okay, that's good.
We make a survey about drug policies and human rights here in Germany. One interesting thing is, for example, around 20% of the people who participate say they in the last year suffer physical violence from the police only for smoke cannabis. And for me, it's interesting, because maybe for Latin America, 20%, it's not a big number, but here in Germany, it's a big number.
Yeah.
So we can see the need of the police treatment with people who use drugs.
And that's interesting. How do you define those violent acts? So, is it beatings, or what type of violence does the police use? Do you know?
Yes, these kind of things, push, physical, not torture, like.
No, I understand. Yeah. No, because I in Norway, it's been a big debate for the last couple of years of police using certain methods to find out if a person has been using an illegal drug, such as searching in their homes. If the police, they used to, if they find you with a joint in your hand, they also search your home, and they take your mobile, your cell phone, they search the phone, they take blood tests, or urine tests, urine samples. And it's been the state attorney has declared that this is an illegal practice, that it's against the law to use such infringing methods on individuals when they are suspected of a minor crime. Taking blood or urine samples is within the law if they suspected you are driving a vehicle under the influence, but just to do them because they want to prove if you have used cannabis in the last couple of days, it's against the law. So we have that they have discovered that the police have been breaking the law for decades, and doing so several thousand times a year. So the police call this new rules, but it's actually not new rules, it's old rules that they now have to abide. And this is this whole process is a result of the debate about the decriminalization of illicit drug use in Norway. That reform didn't go through, as you probably know, but there have been some changes in the way, especially the police practice and use their methods.
Yes, the thing of blood test without the judicial order is really dangerous, because here in Germany, that practice, you can see that practice in Baviera, for example. So depends of the state. And that is a big issue also here, because make blood tests without judicial order.
Yeah, and the history has shown that there has been prosecutors who has allowed for this practice. They have approved the practice. It's been a systematic breach of the law within the police and the prosecutors. Well, yeah. So it's not only within like the officer's individual choice to take blood and urine. It's been approved also by prosecutors. But I think I read somewhere or heard from a good friend of mine about an incident in Germany, I think. And this case went to the Human Rights Court. I think it was a person suspected of selling drugs. And when the police arrested him, he swallowed something. And they used a baton to make him gag or to throw up or to open his mouth. And that was also, the Human Rights Court found that to be a breach of that individual's human rights. And well, to take it back to Norway, the police has really, well, at some level, the police are saying that we want to follow the rules and abide by the law as they should. But there's also been a very coordinated media campaign from the police telling the public that we are now helpless when it comes to helping people helping people who use illicit drugs, which is a paradox, because they have been actively hurting individuals and infringing on their rights, and now they say we can't help people anymore. But the police chief in Norway has suddenly changed her public opinion on this matter and has said that it's important that the police abide by the law, finally. So yeah, we hope for a better future and more progress here. Can I just ask a question from you guys? I feel like you, of all the people I've had on this podcast, I feel like you maybe are the best to answer this, no pressure. Because when we talk about legalization, the debate of legalization in Norway and in other countries, and I know this is also a topic in Germany in the debate, that legalization is good to compete with the black market. We need a legal option, a regulated option to compete with the black market, to prevent money from entering into organized crime environments, which again, you know, fund other criminal activities. But the debate is very local minded. We talk about gangs in Norway. Do you see, well, obviously not that many countries have legalized cannabis, but do you see how more and more countries legalizing could have I don't know if you call it a geopolitical effect? But, you know, when we talk about the big guys within the criminal markets, cartels, international gangs, do you see it have an effect on their economy in the future?
Yes, because the cannabis is the second drug more consumed in the world. So if you move out this market from the black market, you cut the liquidity of these organizations. But I think this is only for one moment, because you know they have a diversity of criminal markets, and yeah, the diversification of the drug trafficking organizations is a big issue also. But I think the regulation can move out the liquidity for the criminal organization. Yeah, but the real solution is to regulate all the legalized drugs. Also, specifically with the cannabis, I think the geopolitical change, if the industry was with clear rules and international commerce, I think is a really good thing for Latin America and for Africa also.
Mm. let me not be the devil's advocate here, but it's a genuine question I have. So let's say there are big changes happening in Latin America, let's say in Colombia, and the government want to regulate cannabis and let's say cocaine also. So what stops a cartel from, you know, just going legal, just reinvesting their...
It's the same thing with the alcohol prohibition in the 30s. Yeah. The Rockefellers make their real fortune making transport from illegal whiskey, and they only move out the arms and continue with the business. That is one of the solutions. And I know it's difficult more for the people who lost family and friends in the war on drugs. But if the point is stop the blood in the streets, we need to see for a way where we create like a real peace in the countries who have more collateral damage on this war on drugs. So Central America, Colombia, Central Africa, Southeast Asia. So if we want to end the violence, we need to negotiate also. So It's not a popular issue to speak, because it's a war, and you know, to finish a war, all the parts need to to negotiate, because the political institutions like the governments and security forces lost this war with the criminal.
Yeah, you're right. And I feel like that's a winning argument, that if the cartels put down their weapons, that would be a big step towards progress. And as you said, peace and lives will be saved. It wouldn't bring anyone back, but it could prevent future damage. So I think that's a very good point, and I'm glad I asked that question. So before we finish off, do you have any predictions for the rest of the Europe, other countries that may follow behind Germany when they go forth with legalization?
So we hope. Yeah, we hope that Germany can have a good role for this domino effect. What we hope. What will happen in Europe, and not only in Europe, of course, yes.
I think from here to 2035, we can see a legal market in Europe Union.
Well, that sounds like a dream, and 2035 isn't one day too early.
I guess the point of inflection was December 2, 2020 with the reclassification of cannabis. That's the point of no return.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. So we'd just like to thank you guys for coming on today. I feel like it's appropriate, maybe a little bit early, but to wish everyone a happy new year. And thank you guys for coming on. And I can't wait to talk to you again, because I feel like we should do more episodes like this when we follow the slow steps taken in Germany. And especially in 2024, when we hopefully see a flourishing legal market for cannabis in Germany. So thank you guys so much.
Thank you,
Andre. Can't wait to talk to you guys again. Have a good day.
Thank you, Andre. Have a good day.
Du har hørt på Normalprat, en serie samtaler mellom André Nilsen og personer som engasjerer seg i norsk ruspolitikk.